it's too ambitious, I think, for scientists to develop a comprehensive picture of human nature. What I admire is the rigor with which she tries to perform this program. However, there are several weaknesses. Is it possible to prove that the social ethic of self-renunciation is right and does justice to human nature? Is that possible? I think she insufficiently recognizes the fundamental limitations of scientific knowledge. Even the combined findings of all the sciences will not deliver a worldview, I think. These findings would at best contribute to such a worldview. And as a result, I think there is insufficient distinction between ordinary experience, worldview, paradigm, science, and philosophy. I think it's not right, it's not the case that the worldview is just a compilation of these scientific findings and paradigms and auxiliary hypotheses. She thinks that she can construct such a worldview, and that theology essentially is the construction, more the scientific construction of such a world picture, which is more than model-like. So all in all, I see a certain ambivalence. There's on the one hand recognition of the fact that science is based on presuppositions, with as a consequence a rejection of positivism. However, at the same time, she also adheres to a physicalist ontology and to the idea, and that's my main point, that one can prove, that is to say, find scientific evidence for a normative idea of human nature. Well, of course, a lot more can be said about it, and I don't say that this attempt is totally impossible. However, the claim that this would confirm or in the end even lead to a complete world picture, I don't think that goes too far for me. Well, where are we? Part two, Dooibeert. More common area, I think, for most of us here. Two central ideas in Dooibeertian thinking, already mentioned earlier this week. On one hand, the idea of creational richness, diversity, modal distinctness, and at the other hand, the idea of the heart as center of human existence. Compared to Barber, this means that there is, on the one hand, a certain convergence in the sense that his critical realism looks like or seems in accordance with the neo-Kantian flavor of Dooibeertian thought. However, Dooibeert would never agree with his process approach in the sense that he would certainly think that this process philosophy blurs the creator-creation distinction. Compared to Murphy, agreement and rejection of the independence of science and religion. However, much sharper distinction, as you already suggested, between ordinary experience, scientific knowledge, and philosophical reflection by Dooibeert. And of course, Dooibeert would also reject physicalism as well as dualism. So this is a part of the presentation I used earlier. So this I will go over rather quickly because you know this, I think, all. Dooibeert stands in the Dutch neo-Calvinist tradition. Abraham Kuyper's famous dictum, there's not any square inch of this creation about which Jesus Christ doesn't say, this is mine. Very fundamental for any neo-Calvinist worldview. In his lectures on Calvinism, puts an emphasis on the sovereignty of God in Christ, creational abundance, with both ideas of diversity and of coherence and unity, and also the idea that all human activity is rooted in the heart. The Reformational movement has now 7 chairs in Holland. It flourishes. There's a center for Reformational philosophy. There's a Doywit chair, as you heard earlier, with an interdisciplinary master of Christian studies of science and society. Several students of Redeemer have participated in that program, and I can recommend it, of course. Affiliations with many institutions over the world, 2 journals influence in the area of technology, politics, and healthcare. That's one of the interesting things, that it's not so much professional philosophers as well as people in these applied sciences that see the value of this sort of thinking and have profited much of the Doywitian systematic philosophy. So Craig said at the first night that the neo-Calvinist tradition, philosophical tradition, runs the risk of a shallow and even empty worldview conception in which there is no room for scriptural reflection. That's not the way it has begun, of course, and these are famous texts and often repeated. Romans 11, verses 36. For from him and through him and to him are all things. 1 Corinthians 8. Yet for us there is but one God, the Father, from whom all things came and for whom we live. And there is but one Lord, Jesus Christ, through whom all things came and through whom we live. If I have to explain to a non-scientist what Doywitian philosophy tries to express, then I always say something like this, that he tries to give a philosophical expression to this idea of creational abundance and dependence on God of everything in the world. This radical dependence then is expressed by Doywit with the term meaning. Everything exists by expressing and referring to the law of God. The expressing of and the referring to the law of God. So meaning is referring and expressing. There's 2 ways. It expresses from top to bottom, and it refers to it is from bottom to the top, so to say. If reality is here and the law is there. Later, he has a more sophisticated view of 2 sides of reality, a law side and a subject side, in which the law side represents order and the subject side the meaning aspect of reality. Then there is a fundamental distinction between God and created reality, which is in opposition to pantheism and mystic participation in the existence of God. Then reality has a structure, irreducible diversity and coherence of modal aspects. Richness and order of creation refer to God and are an expression of who he is. And then, this is a very important thing, the central problem of post-Enlightenment culture, according to Doywit, is the absolutization of the theoretical attitude of thought, what we would now call scientism, or the idea that science offers the royal road to truth. It was Doywit's conviction that the fragmentation of the philosophical debate in the 30s was mainly a result of the absolutization of theoretical thinking. I cannot go into that more here, but it's a very central point in his philosophy, of course. The relevance of this emphasis on meaning is that reality is not just neutral material, nor just matter, nor a collection of objective facts. You can think about what I said about professionalism. That's basically a sort of attitude in the professions which is based on this idea of the neutrality or the value freeness, so to say, of facts. We just have to do with facts, and meaning is a kind of subjective addition to the facts, and we have to keep our professions free from these subjective additions. It's a very dominant view still. Well, from a Dojibwe perspective, this is not at all the case, because everything in every aspect of its existence refers to God and is an expression of who he is. And then there's normativity implied in the structures of reality. That is to say, these structures express how the world is meant to be. Human beings are always responding to this normative order. And this human responding is directed by the heart as the center of human existence. I come to the end of this very short introduction into Dojibwe thought. Structure of reality is adapted to the structure of human beings. Human beings disclose reality. The opening up of the different aspects of reality leads to differentiation and integration. They always go together. Globalization would be seen by Dojibwe as something in itself as possible, with clear going up together of differentiation and integration of spheres of interacting. And this disclosure of reality goes by the opening up of object functions. For instance, a tree can become an aesthetic object. I can have an imagination, an aesthetically qualified idea or notion of the tree. I see it as something very beautiful. And Dojibwe would say, when I treat it as an aesthetic object, then the aesthetic aspect, which it has in as such, is then opened up by my aesthetic imagination, by my inner imagination. And by that opening up of this aspect of the thing, of this an object function is going to function within in the relation toward me as a subject. So, all in all, creational order is philosophically accounted for in three ways: in a theory of modalities, in a theory of entities or entitary structures, individuality structures, he called it, and then a theory of intertwinement of these entitary structures, and this intertwinement he calls enkapsis. So what does this mean for science? First of all, I think science is limited because it is bound to abstraction or methodological reduction. And then abstraction means that the scientist focuses on one aspect, or sometimes two, but not more, aspects of reality. And this is very fundamental for Dojibwe, even at the first page of the Wijsbegeerte der Wetsidee, and he repeats that in the new Critique of Theoretical Thought. It begins with every time, a sentence something like this, every time a scientist directs his attention to a certain part of reality, the coherence of this reality is broken up, and a certain part of reality is abstracted, a certain aspect of reality is abstracted from the totality of the experience. And then the important next sentence is that when the scientist tries to reconstrue this coherence, he will not succeed. It's not possible within science to regain this coherence that was lost in the process of abstraction. So this is the very reason, I think, that Dojibwe would never agree with an attempt like that of Nancy Murphy, in which he tries to construct a kind of scientific-like worldview, because he would never think that such the coherence that is needed for such a worldview can be based on scientific reasoning, because we lose it by definition by adopting a scientific attitude. He was very strict in that. We can discuss it, but it is an interesting starting point for the discussion, at least. And so, ordinary experience, naive experience, as he calls it, remains fundamental. It's the starting point for everything we do. So, we have a kind of order. We begin with ordinary experience via abstraction. Scientific knowledge is acquired, and then scientific knowledge has its boundaries. For instance, basic questions in biology, what is a function, for instance? Such a question cannot be dealt with without a philosophical account of a kind of philosophical reflection about what it means to have a function. And then these philosophies of the special sciences are come together in general philosophy, which also has its boundary questions, and these boundary questions are questions about coherence, unity, and origin. So this means for philosophy a rejection of classical metaphysics, because metaphysics is, by definition, for Dooyeweerd, a kind of absolutization of speculative thought. Philosophy is not simply an extrapolation, and this is a very important point for this conference. Philosophy is not simply, for Dooyeweerd, the extrapolation of a worldview based in ordinary experience toward theoretical thinking. One would be inclined to do so, to think so, to see it as a kind of philosophical expression. And in a certain way, this expressivism is there in Dooyeweerdian thinking. However, there are many passages in which he's very clear that philosophy has a much more limited project. Philosophy is not simply an extrapolation of a worldview into theoretical thinking, because it is, first of all, reflecting on the nature of theoretical thinking itself. And this theoretical thinking in itself has a more limited scope. It doesn't have the kind of comprehensiveness that a worldview has. So this means that it is not at all so clear what the relationship between philosophy and worldview is in Dooyeweerdian thinking. I can come to that later, but not now. So this also means that there is no philosophical blueprint for the special sciences. And my contribution to this discussion consists in adding another level, the level of professional knowledge, and that is in line, this is in accordance with what I said earlier about the contextual nature of knowledge, that the way knowledge functions depends on the context, and that scientific knowledge in a professional context acquires different meanings than these pieces of knowledge have within a scientific context. So professional knowledge is based is basically a competence. What is a competence? That's not just having knowledge about something, it's also the ability to perform something, or having practical wisdom, having skills. Well, I skip this one. So in short, we have a radical reformational, a creation perspective, a theory of structures, and then religion is not a separate region, but an encompassing dynamic that influences all aspects and directs us toward the origin of meaning, or to something in reality, deification or idolatry. This is the basic outline. I need some discussion with the chairman of this session. How many time do you allow me? Oh, 15 minutes. Oh, yeah, that's true. Okay, and is that okay for you, or is that too long? Because it's my impression that the lectures here are quite long. So if you do, is it okay for you, a quarter of an hour, or do 10 minutes or so, is that okay? I think in 10 minutes I can do the third part, and the fourth part I can do the afternoon if you wish, or at another moment. I cannot go into Dooyeweerdian anthropology, but his view on man is basically elaborated, of course, upon his theory of entities and of modal structures. The important thing here is that he discerns four substructures, and the most important thing is that these structures are pervaded, so to say, by the religious dynamic. So religion is not confined to one layer. I think that's the most important point of his anthropology, that the heart is not something that is related primarily to the belief function or the faith function, but it is a dynamic that pervades all different layers or aspects of reality and all substructures of reality. So, for instance, in some psychological circles, Christian psychological circles, one is a Christian psychologist when we just add another layer. So we have in medicine the famous biopsychosocial model of Carl Engel in the 60s, important medical doctor. And then this model has become very important in psychiatry for quite a while. And then we have Christian psychologists and psychiatrists who say, well, we just have to add another level at the biopsychosocial model, and then it becomes a biopsychosocial spiritual model. I think this is not in accordance with Dorieweerdian thinking. Dorieweerd would always say that the religious dynamic pervades all levels of and all substructures. It's not something from above as a kind of spiritual level that influences top down the other layers. It's in two directions, so to say. With our entire existence, we are responding. Also, so to say, my stomach and my liver are responding. And it's very intriguing to look at the brain from this perspective, I think. And that's very difficult to do. And I'm not thinking that I've made much progress in that, but that's one of the things I'm busy with. This is back. So structure and direction go together. They are always interwoven. This means there is no neutral ground. Dealing with reality is always also religiously responding. Religion is no separate area. The structural unfolding of substructures implies opening up of analogical moments in the different modal spheres. I cannot explain that here now. It's more technical. It's basically a technical expression of this basic idea and the integration and differentiation I already mentioned. Applied to psychiatry and to clinical psychology also, this means that professionalism is not neutral. Meaning is not added to a neutral objective reality but already present. So this also means that religiosity and spirituality are always present. The patient is religiously responding in every manner of his or her existence. And the professional doesn't need special interventions to act as a Christian professional. It also means no split between subjectivity and objectivity, between religiosity and psychiatry, spirituality and mental illness. Christian psychiatry, if one wants to use that term, means first of all restoration of integrity and aiming at disclosure of prematurely closed functions. And if you wish, in the last part of this presentation, the fourth part, I explain what I mean with this restoration of integrity and this aiming at disclosure. So I use the example of existential anxiety to make clear what it means to restore integrity. And I use the function, the notion of hope in depression as an example of how emotions can be opened up in the course of recovery from depression. I see the religious dynamic, the second bullet is that, as a power, not as a thing in itself, of course, not as a layer, as I said. I see it as a destructive or constructive power in the relatedness to oneself. And this is a Kierkegaardian accent, so to say, in my own thinking. We find the notion of an I-self relationship in Dorieweerd, certainly. However, I think it can be made more explicit because it highlights, it gives kind of linguistic ground to make explicit how the religious dynamic works. I think it works in the relatedness to oneself. I think we can give a full account of evil and of forgiveness by seeing them and analyzing them as dynamics within the I-self that operate within the I-self relationship. Of course, also in relationship with others and with God, but to begin with, in the relationship to oneself. And I learned that from Kierkegaard. In itself, this relational dynamic is closed. The primacy of the other, or other with a both others, so to say, means that we need others and ultimately God to have our existence opened up. So, graphically represented in this way, I can not say very much about the self here. I have an idea about this. But what this picture mainly expresses is that this self-relatedness is something that is closed in itself till it is addressed or opened up by others. This is not only something reformational. In the thinking of Charles Taylor, this is also a very important element, that authenticity can only mean anything if we are addressed, we are called by the other. And evil and ambivalence can be accounted for as a kind of split, or as a kind of two-directional, multi-directionality within the I-self relationship. I see evil as a consolidation of this split. For instance, this is of course a very huge example, the torturer. There are, for instance, psychological analysis of the way a torturer can torture, and for instance as determined by shame. And this shame can be seen as something, as an emotion or as a kind of existential dynamic, which makes it impossible to view certain aspects of yourself. You're hiding from these aspects. However, this cannot then go unnoticed, and this evokes anger, the shame-anger cycle. And this is a kind of closeness in oneself with an emotional color, which gives rise to destructive behavior. So what are the merits and weaknesses of this theory? I think it's a rich theory of structures. It's a deep theory, it's integral. The weaknesses are there's no account of evil so far, and the consequences of sin. The theory of supertemporality has raised a lot of discussion. I will go into that. Lack of contextual sensitivity. And then in spite of Doyeweerd's intentions to open up the fragmented discussion of his time, he didn't. Many people are agree upon that he didn't succeed in that. And there are many reasons one can mention why this occurred. However, one of them may be that the high religious profile, the religious antithesis thinking, that has abhorred non-Christian thinkers. I've been thinking about this point also because of an article by Lambert Zuidervaart in the last issue of Philosophia Reformata about the notion of truth, which Doyeweerd is indeed sketched and depicted as a person who says that as a philosopher one has to stand into the truth or in the truth in order to develop a rich theory, and everyone who doesn't stand in the truth cannot develop it. Well, how can one really reach the other if you are convinced of yourself alone as standing in the truth? That kind of discussion is needed within reformational circles, I think. Well, now finally, possible views on the relationship between religion, spirituality, and mental illness. Four positions, a view on integration and a reformational approach. And I think I have to skip the case vignette. Four positions, very simple, very elementary. Mental problems are spiritual. Some evangelical accounts and some radical orthodox fundamentalist accounts say something like this. Spiritual problems are psychological. That's the mainstream approach in humanistic psychology. Then separation. The biomedical model is an example of a separating approach to this issue. And then they overlap. Four views on this overlapping and connecting. I derived this from work by Johnson and Jones, 2000, Psychology and Christianity, the title. They discern a biblical counseling model, which most best fits with the first model. And the other three, all three fit best with the integration model, or the overlap model. The level of explanation model, which is basically epistemological, it says that religion and science just different perspectives to one and the same reality. Then the integration view, which is more, well, hermeneutical, so to say. It puts emphasis on the fact that one can develop a professionality as Christian in which one has a distinct and embodies a distinct attitude in one's profession, can be seen as both embodying normal practice but also embodying a Christian perspective on suffering and patients suffering from all kinds of illnesses. And then a Christian psychology view, which says that, which tries to integrate within a biblical psychology elements from this, different scientific theories. I can add two other models, and I think there are many more. One important model today is exemplified in the work of Robert Cloninger, a famous personality theorist, who includes religion within an extended concept of psychology. It fits also well with the so-called positive psychology movement. And then I think there's also a reformation of philosophical model, which combines in a certain way the levels of explanation model and integration view at the professional level, and then with an inspiration from the systematics of Doriwit. And this is how this works. I think, and I think that that's why I think it's important to say this, this is what I said about Doriwit has relevance for the integration debate. And first of all, to make clear that integration means something different depending on the level of discussion. So integration means something different at the level of philosophy, at the level of science, and at the level of professional knowledge. So I don't think there it's possible to have a comprehensive and total integration. I think that is clear now from what I said about Doriwit, but this is how it looks like when you look at the different levels. At the philosophical level, it means, first of all, philosophical criticism of presuppositions, searching for common ground between the approaches, looking for common metaphors or analogies between paradigms, and then also more practical, elucidating all sorts of normative choices and trying to connect the different perspectives that are offered by different participants in a discussion. At the scientific level, there is the levels of explanation approach, epistemological, the second approach that I mentioned. And then I think the possibility of developing interdisciplinary research programs in which religious studies people work together with psychologists and psychiatrists, social scientists, and also the work of operationalization of religion. It seems to be a very difficult and intricate concept, and that it has been unraveled in many components, so to say. I think this is worthwhile to do. And then at the professional level, development of competences, for instance, diagnostic sensitivity for existential issues, or development of distinctive approaches, for instance, I'm working now with a PhD student with who is developing a workbook for religious interventions, as she called it. Not really interventions, but discussion of religion, religious matters in certain forms of psychotherapy. Well, so to conclude, what I'm saying here is, and I just repeat what I said earlier, that integration from a Doriwitian perspective doesn't imply a kind of overall and encompassing integration of all sorts of scientific theories and pictures of man within one single pattern, and from the perspective of one Christian worldview. But that it means all sorts of activities at all sorts of levels of discussion, a philosophical level, a scientific level, and a professional level. Thank you very much for your attention.